I have to say, I don't normally do crowds this big. There's not that much big crowds involved in nuclear engineering when you go and do a talk. It tends to be all very niche topics, of which there are maybe 5 or 10 people in the world who really understand it, and other people who are there for the free stuff. So this is the biggest crowd I've talked to. Thank you. So, the usual disclaimers. I've been working in the UK civil nuclear industry for 11 years, and before, and including that, I've done about 15 years of nuclear assurance. How you do nuclear without working in the civil nuclear industry, I will leave to your imaginations. My opinions are my own and do not reflect my employer, and it's just as well that I was sent to check in because I had my work hat on. Do not reflect my employer, EMF, or any regulatory bodies, living or dead. Is there anyone from the Office of Nuclear Regulation in the audience? One? Okay, I need to watch what I say. Please do not mess with radioactive stuff. Caveat, unless it's specifically designed for use in an educational context. And caveat to the caveat, follow the manufacturer's guidance. Treat ionizing sources with respect. The danger from them is not immediately evident, and you only find out afterwards when you've got a nasty light, red bit, and an itch. Caveat to the previous caveat, I'm not a radiation protection advisor, and this is not safety advice. I will often use non-serious language to deal with serious topics. I have a military background, and that gives you a really warped sense of humor and a way of coping with stuff that isn't necessarily healthy. And the last one, please leave your ionizing sources at home when you come to EMF. So, what happened? Quite a few people know that I work in nuclear, and one day at EMF in 2024, I start getting Telegram messages from people sending me photos saying, haha, look what I found in the swap shop. Now, being the moral and ethical person that I am, once I was aware of this, I couldn't actually not do anything about it, because that's a conscious, active decision to leave something potentially dangerous in the field. So I wasn't auger at the time. I was just some random. And it was like, okay, I better go do something. So I went and got it. Yes. So what do we know about these items? So they were made in Denmark by, and I apologize to any Danes, Electronic Centralen, which is now called a company called Force Technology. They were for calibrating smoke detectors. So if you've got a smoke detector that's supposed to go off at a specific density of smoke in the air within certain errors, you need to be able to test that. And the way that you do that is you put it in a chamber with one of these, and you put smoke in, but you need a way of measuring how much smoke you've got, which is what this does. So instead of just giving you a beep, beep, beep when you burn your bacon, it gives you a number to say how much or how dense the smoke particles are, and then they can check that it's working properly. Each unit contains about a microgram of americium-241, which is an alpha source and a weak gamma source. So it's a strong alpha particle source and a weak gamma source, and I'll get to why that's important. And it's about 12 to 15 times spicier than your typical home ionization smoke detector. So enough to give cause for concern. So how do they actually come to be at EMF? At the time, we were desperate to get more information about them, and we were very, very clear that the people involved would not be named, and this continues to this day. I don't actually know who brought them to EMF. That is a secret that is being kept within a close circle of auger, and I don't mind. And the reason for that is so that when we do have incidents like this, no one should be afraid that they are going to be penalized for doing something that they possibly, in retrospect, shouldn't have. The idea is that we're all safer if we feel safe to speak up. So yes, they were manufactured back in the noughties by this Danish company. Sorry, I'm going to get banned from Legoland. They went to a UK company to calibrate smoke detectors. It was very easy to buy radioactive items from other EU member states at the time. There were two forms involved. And basically, you send a form, you fill out what it is, you send the form to the recipient, they sign it to say, yes, we can look after it. They send it back to you, you sign it to say that you've seen their signature, and then you send it to your regulator, and that's it. Piece of cake. Brexit happened, all of that went away, and I assume that at that point, the company involved discovered that it was going to be very difficult to get rid of them then. So they probably sat on a shelf for a long time and then were given to a well-meaning and entirely blameless hackerspace who then tried to figure out what to do with them and then eventually went, oh, EMF's got a swap shop. We'll just drop them there. Someone will make use of them. Well-meaning, that's important, and entirely blameless. So is americium-241 dangerous? It's kind of like the daddy long legs of radioactive sources. So it's got teeth and poison in the form of the alpha particles, but alpha particles are too big to penetrate the layer of dead skin that's on your body. Now, this is important. It's the layer of dead skin that's on the outside of your body, not on the inside. Don't eat them. Alpha particles, because they're so big and because they've got a strong positive charge to them, they're about 20 times more damaging than an equivalent amount of other forms of ionizing radiation. So, yeah, multiply by 20 when you're going from grays to sieverts. Is anyone nuclear in the audience who understood what I just said? One, two, three. Okay, we've got at least three people who understand the difference between a gray and a sievert. Probably not. Ask your RPA. But yes, so big chunky boys cannot penetrate skin, but if you ingest an alpha particle source, it's really, really bad. Because those alpha particles are so damaging and they are directly in contact with your tissue, they are very damaging indeed. It's why alpha particles actually get used in radiotherapy sources. So for treating cancer, they will combine whatever alpha emitter with a drug that's with a chemical that's going to accumulate in the target organ. So if you've got liver cancer, they will stick something that accumulates in your liver to some americium or some other alpha emitter and give it to you as a medicine. But you know, that's a small, that's a very, very small amount, picograms. This is a microgram, which is 1,000 times more. Okay. Oh, wait until you see the next slide. I wasn't planning to eat one, so why all the fuss? So they're not particularly dangerous, like I said, provided that they are not disassembled and the source is in good condition and your exposure is time limited. So why all the fuss? There are a lot of curious sources, curious souls at EMF with screwdrivers. And initially we didn't know how many of these there were, which is why there was all the fuss on the socials to find out more. And we didn't really know what state the sources were in. So I'm going to get in trouble for this one. Good trouble. And I'll just point out, it took me less time to get at the source than it took for John T. to read the manual. So his fears were justified. Okay. So some nice photos taken at home to show you what they look like. It's basically a big metal can with a grill around it that allows the smoke to get in. It's got a little port on the back for a vacuum pump, so it's continuously drawing and sampling air. And then on the right-hand side there, that's the source. And it's a gold foil source. So it's a very small amount of americium suspended in gold kind of like this. So if the blue dots are the americium, they're suspended within a gold matrix, and gold is vapor deposited onto the surfaces to make a covering that is microns thick. And it has to be that thin to let the alpha particles escape through the gaps between the atoms, because otherwise they get stuck inside and you've got a nice gold thing that doesn't do much. So with that in mind, they're kind of fragile, right? So can anyone spot the issue? Yeah? There? E? So that gave me pause. Right. So the next question that's probably in a lot of the minds of people who didn't eat an americium source last time, but did go to the swap shop. I handled one of them. Do I need to worry? Short answer, no. Full stop. I've got this nasty habit of answering long emails at work that end in a closed question with yes, full stop, or no, full stop. And it always gets me into trouble at reviews. But yeah, the short answer, no. I checked over the housing with, after removing the source, checked over the housing with a contamination meter that is sensitive to alpha particles specifically, and did not find anything above background. So as far as I'm aware, those sources contained all of their americium. Please do not sue us. But yes, this one is, this detector is sensitive to alpha particles specifically. It's not the same as a radio code, and I'll have some numbers to prove why in a moment. Radio codes are quite limited in what they can do. So don't use one to figure out if something's safe to eat or not. It's basically a fancy dosimeter. What happened to the sources? So once I was aware of them, obviously I couldn't stand by and do nothing. That's a conscious decision to be a bystander. I collected them from the shop with, I kid you not, this is the technical term for this technique, the poop scoop technique, where you get a plastic bag and you put it over your arm and you grab the thing and you then put the bag over it. But actually, I took it out of the hand of a friend like that, who then went a little bit pale. because I didn't have anything to drop at the swap shop, I had to pay real cash monies for these. It gets better. I have to pay to get rid of them as well. Package them appropriately, and they're now stored securely. They are not at EMF. Oh. I was actually approached by some other installation people who wanted to use them, or one of them within an installation, and I felt that it wasn't a responsible use of radioactive material. Yeah, bit of a prude, whatever. But if work found out, I was assisting with that kind of thing. Yeah. So the next step, finding out who to talk to. This is what I asked if there are any regulators. So there is no single regulator in the UK for things relating to nuclear and radiation. It depends who you are as to who you talk to and what you do. So my regulator is the Office for Nuclear Regulation. They license nuclear activities at licensed nuclear sites. Okay. EMF is not a licensed nuclear site. Yet. We might take a very drastic solution to our power generating problem at some point. The Health and Safety Executive regulates most, you know, nearly all workplaces in the UK, including EMF. It's classed as a workplace. For the people who volunteer here and build everything, big thanks to them, because they've been here all week in the heat. But yeah, the HSE will regulate businesses that may foreseeably come into contact with ionizing sources. Scrap dealers is one of the main ones. People bring pieces of metal to get them weighed in for scrap, and then it turns out to be a radiotherapy machine that's been stolen from a hospital in Brazil. And the last one is the Environment Agency. So they regulate possession and disposal of non-exempted sources. So if a school has sources for educational purposes, or a hospital has sources for radiotherapy purposes, so on and so forth. It is the Environment Agency that regulate that. Excuse me. Oh, I tell you what, if you brush your teeth and drink Vimto, it's not a good combination. So the important bit at the bottom there, that's for non-exempted sources. So the next question to answer, are they exempted sources? Or how much legal trouble am I in? European Union Council Directive, which is known as a Basic Safety Standards Directive. It's part of UK law. We retained it after Brexit. Article 12 sets a dose limit of 1 millisievert per year. Is anyone a radiation worker? One. Two. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's 10, isn't it? Yes. So registered radiation workers are allowed to have 10, but we have to be 10 times more careful with the public. But always has to be, oh yeah, a 1 millisievert is about 10,000 bananas, which you could conceivably eat in a year. Hold on to that nugget. But some sources are exempt. There's a whole bunch of them. And Article 26, Part D, any electrical apparatus provided that, it does not cause a dose rate exceeding 1 microsievert per hour at 10 centimeters from any accessible surface. That was pretty much written into the regulations for ionizing smoke detectors. So your ionizing smoke detector at home is an exempted source. That means you can buy it in Tesco, stick it in your house, it's fine. Most of them these days tend to be optical. So unless it's got a trefoil on the back, it'll be an optical one. So yes, I measured it. There was basically nothing, so they passed. This is good. Has anyone ever tried to eat 10 bananas an hour? No, good. Oh, that might work. You're not gonna have many friends afterwards. Oh, okay. It'd be interesting to have a chat with you later in the bar. I've already been reminded that I'm running out of time. So that's all. That exemption is fine, provided that you don't disassemble it. So I went, well, just how spicy are they if you take them apart? So this is my personal detector. It's a Rad Alert Ranger. It is sensitive to alpha, beta, and gamma radiation and X-rays. It's intended for rock hounding, I think. It has the advantage of not being ruinously expensive. A radio code by comparison will measure beta and gamma radiation only. And we did these measurements at 4 centimeters because alpha particles do not travel very far in air. Normally you would do this at 10. And then we divided by 600 to get disintegrations per second, which is this fancy unit called a becquerel. I trained as an electronic engineer, so I think in hertz. Becquerel hertz, but it's not a periodic signal, so it can't be hertz, so it's becquerel. The results. With the Rad Alert Ranger, we measured a dose of 2.4 microsieverts per hour, which is equivalent to eating 24 bananas an hour, or one banana every 2.5 minutes. I love the banana equivalent dose. The radio code only measured 0.163 microsieverts an hour, which is the small amount of gamma radiation that americium gives off. So you could get a reading from a radio code that says this is fine, because that's about a Brazil nut, 0.1, or that is close to a banana, actually, but is really not safe to eat. The counts per second with the scintillator is weird. I don't understand enough about crystal structure to really understand how scintillators work. They're just strange. And yes, do not try and eat a banana every 2.5 minutes. Seriously. We got nerd sniped and went on a slide side calculation, and this is equivalent of 69 kilograms of bananas per day. You will die. Can I get rid of them? So the electronic parts of this setup went away as e-waste, no problems. My low-level waste, so this is my personal protective equipment, like gloves, that was disposed of through my very understanding and patient employer of the last decade. And that included some other bits and bobs and the paper that I've been using to work on. The 241. Work, unfortunately, doesn't have a waste route for this. So when you're trying to get rid of radioactive stuff, you have to have an established process to do it, which is safe and all the rest of it, and that's known as your waste route. We've got waste routes for this and that and the other, but two that I know now know that we definitely don't have is americium and gold. And if you want to know about the gold story, find me in the pub. The original manufacturer actually got in contact with EMF and then with me to arrange taking them back, because that is normally what would happen to a piece of equipment like this. You return it to the manufacturer at the end of its useful life. Unfortunately, Brexit has made that prohibitively time-consuming and expensive. Yes, exactly. If anyone spots my European Union flag on camp, it still has the correct number of stars. It'll be accurate again one day. Yeah. Fortunately, commercial companies exist that will take radioactive material off you for a fee. It's a few hundred quid, but that will be the problem got rid of. Yeah, that's also a key point. If you did bring something radioactive here, we had to get rid of it. It does cost money to do that, so please don't. Can I use them for something else? Interesting. Is it anyone on the explosions and fire Discord? Or is at least familiar with explosions and fire on YouTube and the kind of people, yeah. So the first suggestion came from there, which was to combine it with some beryllium and make a neutron source. And I thought that's really interesting, because neutrons are really interesting and they have interesting properties. And one of their interesting properties is they make other things radioactive. Do I really want more radioactive stuff in my life? No. I could make an alpha voltaic battery for like a long life LoRa sensor or something, maybe, but that means leaving radioactive material unsupervised and insecure. I can make a genuinely random number generator, because radioactive decay is entirely random. I need to talk to installations and Russ as potentially something to bring to EMF next time, but we have to think about the security and safety. If you have any ideas, on a postcard, please. emf@tris.cat. If you want to find me later, I'm also where.is.tris.cat. And thank you for not bringing your ionizing sources and other radioactive stuff to EMF.